Welcome to the Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy. I'm your host, Matt Dudley. After decades of failed regionalization attempts, the towns of Harwich and Chatham came together this week for a ribbon cutting of the new Monomoy High School. In this month's edition of Focus on Energy, I'm joined by Barry Worth and Peter Kokolis, members of the Cape Light Compact's governing board appointed by the towns of Harwich and Chatham, Vicky Marchant, a program analyst for the Cape Light Compact's commercial and industrial energy efficiency programs, and Mark Stafford, a lead new construction representative from National Grid's Sales and Programs Operation Division, to talk a little bit about the project and how both companies were involved in getting energy efficiency into the design and construction of this beautiful school. Barry, Peter, Vicky, Mark, welcome.
Well, glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we just left the ribbon cutting of the Monomoy Regional High School. Pretty astounding size, pretty beautiful school. We're here to bring the listeners of Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy a little bit more context into the process behind how we were all involved in making the school a little bit more energy efficient. Let's start, though, with a bit of historical context as to why the school was created and why Harwich and Chatham decided to regionalize. Barry, if you have anything.
Well, I guess from the perspective mainly of Harwich is that there have been a number of attempts over the years for Chatham and Harwich to get together and regionalize in one context or another. However, none of them really amounted to anything. In most recent years, that has become a little more critical, particularly because the state decided along the way that they were not going to fund schools like Harwich or Chatham going alone to try to do a lot of improvements. So it became something that would be very economic if we could combine the two systems and to regionalize. And regionalization has become something it's become a buzzword. It's not a no-no as it used to be 15, 20 years ago. People wanted to, if you had something to do for Harwich, only Harwich people or only Harwich numbers would be involved. And it's become more common that people are accepting regionalization. I guess it was in about 2003, we had an estimate in Harwich that we would spend about $33 million to renovate Harwich High School and to address some of the needs in the Harwich Middle School, about $33 million. In reality, when we put this all together now, it's going to cost, it is costing about $21 million to do that. It's a savings of $10 million for the taxpayers. Pretty significant.
So Harwich was looking in the mirror at themselves, deciding that they needed to fix their schools. Just if you ever drive down Oak Street here in Harwich, or if you have in the past, you can see that the old high school was a bit dated. And that the just kind of to summarize that, so the state was saying, if you need to fix that, we really can't help fund that, and that's all on the Harwich taxpayers?
That's what it would have been. Well, yes, because the state said, we're not going to pay the usual 50 or 51% that they add to a high school or a school construction project. They said, this school, because regionalization repairing the school would not be economic just for Harwich. Same thing would go for Chatham.
For Chatham. Yeah. So in comes Chatham, right? To the north you've got Brewster, and Brewster's part of the Nauset district, is that true?
Yes,
it is.
To the west you've got Dennis, which is obviously part of the DY district, and to the east you've got Chatham, right? The only other remaining single town out there with a high school.
It kind of makes it almost automatic that would be
you only had one more choice.
Partner.
So Chatham was looking at a similar situation, Peter, is that?
From a Chatham perspective, we didn't have the same incentive that we needed to have a new school or that we were in trouble with the state.
Rating from the state.
Yeah.
State rating.
So that was one of the issues. If you look historically, and I learned this just by being over at the ribbon cutting ceremony, from 1903 to 1968, Chatham and Harwich had the same school system in effect. They had one person that took care of all that. But anyway, over the years, I'll just reiterate kind of what Barry said. Harwich tried twice to get with Chatham, and we denied it. And then Chatham later on went to Harwich and said, we ought to think about regionalization. And Harwich said, no, we don't think we can. So what's different, I guess, is the question. Well, Harwich had a real incentive, but best I can tell, Chatham had a real incentive also. And I say that because I'm a new guy. I got here in the end of 2008, and 2009, I think I went to my first town meeting, but 2010 was the first real town meeting that I got really involved with, and regionalization was part of it. And when you went through what had occurred in Chatham, is we had a declining enrollment. Our demographics were changing. We had school choice children that were coming in, but they only pay a third of what it would be to fill a classroom, something to that effect. So we had a fiscal incentive also to do something different. And why? Not just for the money, but because we couldn't put the programs that you would want in a high school for the 21st century, or the late 20th century, to be able to do that. We couldn't. It was realized by at least a number of people that would be a problem. So there was enough of an incentive so that they could get together, they could meet as a group, and then move forward with a regionalization effort. And it was successful. There's a lot of reasons for that. You may want to get into that later. But generally, it was Chatham saw that they needed a school that was larger, but not too large, right? And this seemed to fit.
Harwich, the school, reached the point where it was going to be decertified if we didn't do something.
So two separate needs, but...
But overlapping.
A new school addresses both in equally sufficient ways. So fast forward to late 2010, when both towns decided to pass the regionalization effort in a special town meeting. Then the ball gets rolling on building this new 100 and some odd, how many square feet is it?
168,000.
168,000 square feet building that sits right behind us right now from the community center here in Harwich. So we got the ball rolling. Mark, Vicky, how did you guys get involved? I guess, you know, if you know kind of who was involved at the start with designing and building, and how did all the design build process get started with this?
Well, we had run into, through the program administrators in Massachusetts that National Grid and Cape Light Compact are part of, basically the utilities, the energy companies for the state. We work on a lot of these projects and deal with design teams and design firms prior to them getting involved in the project's design. We had run into Mount Vernon Group and started talking with them about the project. They brought it to our attention, and we reached out to Cape Light Compact. Cape Light Compact and I started a discussion about the project. It was large enough to fall into what we call a CDA, which is a comprehensive design approach to a design for a school for energy, which is basically a holistic look at the entire structure from the envelope enclosure to the systems to the lighting and how we can save energy the best way possible, how we can maximize what they're going to put out for a budget and how we can support them not only in energy savings but in financial support to realize those energy savings. So buildings are designed to meet code. Our programs are established to exceed the energy code 20% or better, and then we can come in and fund them and get them to meet those energy needs. So we collaborated incredibly well with Cape Light Compact, started the process of meeting with the design teams. I believe the project was a CHIPS school, which is a collaboration for high performance schools, was a CHIPS program. So Arnell from Mount Vernon Group, the mechanical, electrical, the building committee, we all met at the library at Harwich a while back for a lovely 4 to 6 hour get together to go through all of the requirements of CHIPS, which a big portion of that is energy. And Vicky and I and the rest of the group at Cape Light started to get involved with the design for the building, for the systems, and how we could best maximize energy savings.
Right. The Cape Light Compact came through it from a different angle. While Mark was talking with the Boston folks, Steve Litwinowicz, who's the facilities director at the Chatham High School, and I apologize, can't think of the Harwich facilities person, but they had been long-term supporters of Cape Light Compact and energy efficiency in their school. And Steve's Chatham schools were one of the first to earn the Energy Star ratings for schools. And so as we would meet with Steve on other projects, he's on the building committee for this new high school, he would keep us informed. Then when Mark reached out, we, Cape Light Compact, was able to collaborate on the comprehensive design because it's over 100,000 square feet. And on Cape Cod, you know that that is a building size that we seldom see. And with Mark's experience, up north there's quite a few buildings that size and a lot of schools going up. It was great to have that expertise through National Grid to and bring Cape Light Compact on board for combining the efficiency of all the measures that we could possibly identify. And I'd also like to, again, reiterate what Mark said about Mount Vernon Group. They were excellent to work with. They were all on board, and as we worked through a standard piece of equipment versus a high-efficient piece of equipment, they were on top of all of those needs to move up to those higher-efficient models.
And with the decision to make the school a CHIP school or to go a high performance, that's all voluntary from the towns and from the building committee, so that's not required by, I guess that's the question, right? Is it required through anything, through trying to secure funding? Did they decide to do this? Do we know why? And do we know if the impacts of both National Grid and Cape Light Compact's involvement really drove them to participate, you know, in CHIPs and then involve other high performing measures in the school?
I know that MSBA, I think one of the requirements is to try to be either a LEED school or a CHIP school. And I think it's up to the involved communities to decide either or. I don't think our programs impact that either way because we work with LEED and we work with CHIPs to work within their structures for energy savings. So we, whatever the decision is made to do that, it may have been impacted by the selecting Mount Vernon as a model school because they probably used that as a CHIPS formula before and were very successful. And as we all heard today, how much time and money was saved in order to do that. So I think that's how that process evolved. But we will work right with them and partner with them, you know, going forward.
In conjunction with that, coming from that direction, and again, to mention Steve Litwinowicz again, I can just picture Steve at the school building committee meetings reinforcing the need to make the investment in energy efficient equipment.
Yeah, it's Peter, this is from at least the Chatham perspective. I David Whitcomb, who is our former board of, on the board of selectmen, is also on the building committee. And he made, I was on the energy committee at that time, I was chairman, and he made a personal call to me and said, I want Cape Light Compact to be involved. And we had I had talked to Vicki, and we were already involved. But what the superintendent said today is that because of National Grid and Cape Light Compact, he felt that drove at least part of the decisions to move in that direction. And I agree. But it saved $7 million because we were a CHIPS program.
It's pretty substantial. So on top of energy savings, the state decided to chip, no pun intended, chip in some more funds for the school.
Pun intended.
Pun intended, yes. Yeah. So in one thing that I had heard earlier at the ribbon cutting was that this is a model school and that this may be considered a cookie cutter template. And that's something that I didn't know before the event this morning. Do you guys know, and perhaps, Mark, you've seen this working off Cape as well. Mm-hmm. Are there other schools that are identical to this? How is that model school?
There are. And the reason behind modeling school, I think there's pros and cons to it. I think more pros than cons. But basically, you've got a design of a school already completed, maybe through schematic design. So you know you have a template. And then they take that template and they contextually regionalize it. So I live in the town of Marshfield. Marshfield just built a brand new high school. It's the same high school as Whitman Hansen, Foxborough, a few other communities. They mentioned the schools that are the same ones that Mount Vernon Group did in other communities. Go to those schools, they won't be the same to you. Materials are different, interior finishes are different, you know, sharks, colors, things like that. They're made contextually for the place. And where I think the state and the MSBA saves a lot of time and money is that they have the framework established for a school programmatically and also physically put together, and that allows them to save a lot of time. As an architect, architects weren't too thrilled with model schools because now you're taking away maybe your creativity, your contextualism, but we've also strived over the years to come up with great programs and great layouts for schools. Why not take advantage of using that type of program and just creating schools or recreating schools all around? So you see with the savings in money and the savings in time, I think is really beneficial for a model school to be used like that. But it'll take on the nature of its place once it's there and once it's done. So I think it's very, very beneficial, and it does save time and it does save money. And you saw the product.
So. Chances are most people will never go to one of those other schools that's modeled.
Most likely not. I've been to a ton of them, and you do see that. I mean, you know, again, oh, well, you know, the gym's over here. The layout you'll see is the same in the classroom wings and all that. But then when you get there, it's not the same. You know, I've been to Whitman Hanson. I've been to the other schools. I walked into the Marshfield School a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, this is Marshfield. You know, even though it's kind of laid out the same, no, this is their school. And you get that same feeling when we saw that school today. So it's going to be their home.
Another way to save money. So someone had mentioned earlier that this project was pretty expensive, somewhere in the realm of $60 million or so. I think 64.
Over about $65 million.
Total. About 65. And so let's talk about kind of, go back to kind of the town aspect of it. $65 million for the small towns of Harwich and Chatham is quite a substantial amount of money. I imagine that it probably exceeds their annual budgets by a significant amount.
We start with the state contribution of 51%. That cuts it down to about a little over $30 million. And then what we did from there, the cost allocation was based on the population of Chatham and Harwich. Harwich is about twice the size, a little more than twice the size of Chatham. So I believe Harwich paid $25 million out of the first $35 million, somewhere in that. It was 25%, 75%.
And then on top of that, so you mentioned that the state has got funds, that the state paid 51%, and then even they had a kicker for the CHIPS, school, so that takes a lot of burden off the taxpayers themselves. That's a pretty good incentive to follow this model offered by the state, I imagine.
Yeah, in Chatham, there was a real concern that the $64 million estimate, that was the estimate that went to town meeting, was going to be an estimate that was going to be too low. It was a real concern that what you're doing is you're buying in, and it's going to be a lot more. The reality is that if I remember correctly, that the they went out for RFPs, they got bids, and it came in like $58 million rather than $64 million. And then I think they're coming under budget. That's what they said today. So it's somewhere around 56 or 55 mm-hmm. or whatever it is. So this is a real success story from a perspective of, you know, having a budget which sets the limit, and then being able to go out for a competition and then coming back, which helps. You know, if we had known that ahead of time, it wouldn't have been such a close vote in Chatham.
Something rarely seen in the public sector construction field, I imagine, where you come in significantly below budget.
On time and under budget.
On time and under budget. On top of all the savings there, you've got annual savings to look at as far as energy costs in the schools, right? And I think Mark and Vicki, you guys can speak a little bit more about the types of things that the school elected to install and kind of the savings, you know, annual savings looking forward as to what they can realize. Meredith Miller, the commercial and industrial program manager for Cape Light Compact, spoke at today's ribbon cutting, and she said something in the realm of $100,000, $100,000 plus annual savings in energy costs. That's salary and benefits for a teacher, right?
Things like,
or two, and all the, you know, the savings that you can see. So what kinds of things did you guys work on over at the school? What kind of things did you guys push to go for that more efficient, and how are these things selected?
On the electric side, there are benefits to putting controls on your lights. They have energy efficient lighting that they've put in the design, and there are two ways to control those. One are through, you know, the regular switches on the walls, but others are daylight sensing. And the way they've designed that school, there's a lot of daylighting in the rooms, in the corridors, in the office space, and the sensors will read when they do not need to use the electric lights in the classroom and shut off sections of the lights. That's one of the ways that they save. And the other is occupancy sensors. If there's no people in the room, then the lights go out. So that's that adds up over time, having those saved. They use LED lightings, interior and exterior. Those are great savers of energy. In the air conditioning units, they have high efficiency air conditioning units and ventilation. But two of the items that stand out in my mind that some places might not realize the value, but it's in the kitchen, the hood over the stove. In sites where you're not using high efficiency equipment, you turn the hood on, the hood vent on when you walk in the morning, and the last one out shuts it off. So all day long it runs at full power. At this school, that hood is controlled by the needs of the range underneath of it. If they sense that the stove is in use and cooking's in use, then they'll ramp up the fan and the ventilation to match the need. Same thing in the woodworking shop. Instead of that vent hood running all day long, it adjusts itself to the needs of the classroom.
So let's put this in context for most people where, I'm just picturing an example of, say, your dehumidifier in your basement. Instead of just turning it on and trying to dehumidify your basement to zero humidity all the time, mm-hmm. letting it run all day and shutting it off at night, you kind of have this control where it's, is it modulating throughout the day? Is it yes. kind of ramping up and slowing down?
It controls itself based on signals. For example, in the kitchen, it's particulates from the grill, from the stove itself. In the woodworking shop, it would be the dust.
And do we need so in these cases, we don't need to worry about people forgetting to turn them off at the end of the day?
No, not at all. There's also variable speed drive fume hoods in the science area to help keep the ventilation and the air quality up.
So one of the things, just going back to when I was learning about, building design is if you can automate a process, you can take out human involvement, you can save a lot of energy if you automate things, right? Mm-hmm. If you take away that human interaction where maybe three nights a week I forget to turn off that fan, maybe two nights a week I don't. It's quite a bit of energy savings, especially since you only spend about a third of the day there. Are those kind of building automation controls installed in the school across the street? Is that something that we need to worry, that we need to educate the maintenance folks on? And, is this school a smarter school from that aspect than most schools? Or do we still have a lot of those old, let's just call them analog controls where humans control everything?
I'm going to suggest they don't have the analog controls that in the specifications for the equipment, you set up your controls when you're going to start the operation. And then you only need to maintain. You don't override the controls and go back to manual. And again, I keep mentioning Steve because I'm personally familiar with his commitment that he'll make certain all of his personnel are trained in order to make certain that
and that's something that runs the Cable Light Compact does, and I think National Grid does as well, is that building operator
yes.
certificate, train all these municipal workers to understand how these systems work and how to use them.
Right, because that's where the human element still comes to play.
Right.
You'll have these systems, they're not totally running on their own. They still have to be programmed and mm-hmm. monitored and make sure that sometimes if there's a glitch that, we'll fix that. So there is that is offered to make sure that you've now got this state-of-the-art school with this state-of-the-art equipment in there. Let's make sure you know how to run it. So, and there is a lot of maintenance that goes on as part of that. But another point added to what Vicki was saying about the measures, we're the natural gas provider. On the natural gas side, we look at the thermal properties, and a big part of that is the building enclosure, the building envelope. The biggest surface of your building is the roof, the floors, the walls, the windows. We strive to make those as energy efficient as possible, and we have a standard on the baseline of the building code that says you can do X, and we want to do Y. And a lot of the basis of the programs are we can support you to get to Y.
Mm-hmm.
So a building that you hope is going to last 50 years or more, your walls are super insulated, your windows have met the best sort of state of the shelf, the U values, which are the penetration of heat and cold getting through them. Your roof is set up in such a way as the cap of your head that you're not losing a lot of heat or air conditioning because of that. So those things in turn tie into the size of what your mechanical equipment will be, the heating off of your lights. A lot of LEDs are being used, so now you're not over air conditioning a space that maybe is generating too much heat because of the lights that are in there. So all of these things come into play, boilers, furnaces, hot water for heating, hot water for domestic use, in the kitchen for some of their equipment that they use. Every little piece that we can look at that's going to save a kWh or a therm is kind of what our programs are based on. And I have to say, with the help, I would be remiss without mentioning DMI, who was a firm that we hired together, because part of our programs, we like to hire an independent third-party energy expert to help us along the way that could work with the design team to maximize, again, those energy measures. And DMI was an incredible partner with us on this. And we ended up having, 17 energy conservation measures for this project, which on average we get about 10 to 12. This had 17 energy conservation measures between the design team, ourselves, and DMI, maximizing the savings for that project. So it was a great collaboration, a great partnership from the committee straight down to our consultants that I think made that as successful as it is.
So we've influenced them to make these decisions. Obviously, these decisions would cost more than just meeting code, right? And so with a lot of these energy efficiency programs, and I think anyone that's listening to this has heard me say it 1,000 times, is that there's incentives available for all of this stuff. And the Cape Light Compact and National Grid together provided quite a substantial incentive to the school, correct? How much was that? Anybody know off the top of their head? I imagine there's a few people in the room here.
Right.
Going down to the penny?
As the two companies combined their efforts and the equipment combines their efforts, the combined incentive effort was $587,486, so a little over $500,000. $587,486.
It would have been nice at the ribbon cutting to hand them a big check.
We're going to do that on our own. Right. We're going to have our own little special, special ceremonies.
The other advantage of that, Matt, and I know that's your next question, is the savings that they realize. This is the incentive that they get up front for their good decisions and their commitment to energy efficiency. But every month when their utility bills come in, when their bill for the electric use and when their bill for the gas use comes in, it will be lower every month than it would have been using standard equipment.
And from the estimates that I heard Meredith say earlier today, we're in the realm of $10,000 a month on an electric bill.
Yep.
That's quite a bit of money.
It's pretty significant.
It's pretty significant.
When you think of a building like this,
this is great.
A building like that is not going to be just a school. It's going to be a community center. That auditorium that we were in is going to be used for events and shows. It's a year-round building now. It's not just going to shut the doors in June and open the doors again in September. It's going to be used all year round. So to have that kind of significant saving, do we have the payback? Do you know what that number is? I know it's less than
5.8 years.
Yeah, that was less than 6 years.
Yeah.
So in less than 6 years, they'll be paying. They'll have paid for.
So all of those. So those annual savings that they get will have paid for all of those energy upgrades in 5.8 years. In 6 years.
Yep.
And, keep saving years after
right.
that.
We mentioned it's a 50-year building, so we've got 44 years at $100,000 a month. We're talking pretty substantial.
And not to mention what the cost of energy is.
A year, $100,000 a year.
Yeah, a year, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's pretty significant.
Peter was just, he made a good comment about the future.
Yeah, you just don't know what the cost of energy is going to be in the future, and the odds are they're not going down unless some technological breakthrough comes with something. I mean, we're looking at rising prices at least in the near term through the first 5-6 years.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think it's in the ultimate wisdom of everybody involved in this project to take a project like this that is a project that's going to last for a long, long time, and at the state of the day, put everything in that you can now. We know that 5 years from now there may be plasma lighting that's going to blow LEDs away and you might be able to retrofit or whatever, but you took advantage of everything you have today and made the best energy saving project that you can, and it's only going to pay benefits for both communities going forward.
I'd like to thank you guys for joining us talking about this has been fun, and I encourage anyone that's listening to this, if you can, stop by the Harwich School on the Harwich High School on Oak Street, catch a football game this fall, or see if you can get in and take a look around. It's pretty interesting. If you walk through and you see some of the linoleum on the floors, you'll get a good laugh. I got a good chuckle out of that with all the sharks that are built in here and there. So thanks again, and go Sharks.
Hey. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy on WOMR 92.1 FM Provincetown, 91.3 WFMR FM Orleans, and streaming live at WOMR.org. Join us next month, same time, same place. As always, if you have any questions or would like to suggest a topic for Focus on Energy, you can shoot me an email at focus@capelightcompact.org or give us a call at 1-800-797-6699.